Lecture 5, The American Sage, Notes on the State of Virginia.
In our last lecture, we looked at Jefferson the Revolutionary Virginian, and we saw Jefferson at a moment of weakness, at a moment of failure, that moment being his experience as wartime governor of Virginia. In this lecture, we're going to look at Jefferson in a moment of triumph. Jefferson, not the military leader, but Jefferson, the visionary writer, the author. In particular, we're going to look at a remarkable book he wrote called Notes on the State of Virginia. Notes on the State of Virginia is a classic of early American letters. It's a work of both enlightened naturalism, social science, and as we'll see, it expresses in many ways the development of Jefferson's thought. Now, the background to this text is as follows. Jefferson was submitted a series of interrogatories from the French ambassador to the United States. He sent these to each of the governors, asking basically for some fairly brief and cogent statistical information to allow and aid him in creating commercial treaties. Jefferson takes that opportunity and transforms it, creating a classic work of American political thought. So what Jefferson does in Notes on the State of Virginia, and there's actually a play in that title, is to look at not only the state of Virginia, the province and its particular features, but also the state or character of Virginia, the particular situation it finds itself in, its level of development. And for Jefferson, Virginia is always symbolic of America. So it's really a work about the state of America. Where is America at? And I would be unfair not to point out right away that it is in part a work of patriotic boosterism, maybe even American provinciality. He writes in stirring language, "In war we have produced a Washington, whose memory will be adored while liberty shall have votaries, whose name will triumph over time." This despite the fact that Washington won only about 3 or 4 battles in the entire war. "In physics, we have produced a Franklin, than whom no one of the present age has made more important discoveries, nor has enriched philosophy with more or more ingenious solutions to the phenomena of nature. We have supposed Mr. Rittenhouse, second to no astronomer living, that in genius he must be first, because he is self-taught." So part of this is clearly to represent America to Europe as a place of dynamic heroism and enlightened science. But more importantly, for us, the work reveals the maturation of Jefferson's thought, as his revolutionary experience has induced a growing radicalism, a radicalism based on a mixture of high enlightenment theory, radical real Whig ideology, and straightforward Commonwealth sensibilities. It also, however, reveals the contradictions in Jefferson's thought between the real and the ideal. And we're going to look at this in two important dimensions, what I would argue are the two most important elements of Jefferson's notes, particularly for his future political and philosophic development. And that is his agrarianism and his strictures on slavery. So let's start with the agrarianism. Jefferson is not unique in being an agrarian, but he is unique in that his agrarianism is not based on pastoralism. Most agrarians draw on the Roman pastoral tradition, which celebrates the retired life of wealthy aristocrats in private villas. Jefferson's agrarianism, by contrast, takes on a distinctly radical and even moral tone. As he answers question 19 on manufactures, "Those who labor in the earth are the chosen people of God, if ever he had a chosen people, whose breasts he has made his peculiar deposit for substantial virtue, for substantial and genuine virtue. It is the focus in which he keeps alive that sacred fire which otherwise might escape from the face of the earth." Well, as we look at Jefferson's agrarian vision, we're going to find that it's actually a combination of three elements. On the one hand, the Whig cult of independence. On the other, an almost Rousseauian primitivism. And finally, and critically important, traditional Renaissance civic humanism. So first let's look at that Whig cult of independence. The Whig cult of independence largely makes the argument that to be a good citizen, one must be independent. And independent in the sense that one is not dependent on someone else for their career or income. So the key to that sort of independence is obviously property. because it's property which allows us to work for ourselves.